Ed Robertson with a reminder that Louise Sorrell will join us later on in the hour. We hope you stay tuned for that. In the meantime, Chuck Harder is with us as we bring you part two of a conversation that began last week with Walter Koenig. Walter Koenig, the actor known around the world as Mr. Chekhov on the original Star Trek, and Alfred Bester on Babylon 5. Walter's memoir, Beaming Up and Getting Off, Life Before and Beyond Star Trek, is a delightfully candid, often poignant, and very insightful read that walks you through his growing up years as the son of Russian immigrants in 1940s Manhattan, his formative years as an actor with the Neighborhood Playhouse in New York, which we touched on a little earlier in our conversation, his lifelong love of theater, which we'll continue to ask him about, and his deep appreciation for the many opportunities that Star Trek has given him. Beaming Up and Getting Off, available hardcover and as an ebook through Jacobs Brown Media Group. Chuck Harder's book, Mr. Novak, an acclaimed television series, available through our friends at Bear Manor Media. Part one of our conversation with Walter, in case you missed it, is available for listening on demand on the TV Confidential podcast. As we pick up the conversation for part two, Walter had just told a story about a funny and unexpected occurrence that took place many years ago when he appeared in a play at Schoenberg Hall at UCLA here in Los Angeles about a year or so before he joined the cast of Star Trek. The story you just told, Walter, it reminds me of something else you once said, and I think you say this in your book, about why you love the theater. The stage is a free pass. It gives you an opportunity to examine and breathe life to every aspect of your personality, as well as give you an opportunity to play characters that you may not otherwise play before.
Right. I think that's true. Not every part gives you the same opportunity, but certainly I've played characters that were dimensional, that I had not necessarily investigated in myself prior to that, to the opportunity to perform it on the stage. And that can be thrilling. It can be really enlightening and thrilling. Very quickly, the one comment that I treasure and that was told to me as a student at the Neighborhood Playhouse, one of my teachers, I think it was Dick Edelman, said to me one day, I was doing a scene. We weren't doing the play, we were just doing a scene from a play called Golden Boy, and it was a part of a young boxer who plays the violin and is also has a problem with his eyesight. He doesn't see that well. And so when I first saw the role and I first examined the possibilities, I saw him as being a very sensitive guy, and I should certainly make that a part of the character. But he was also a boxer, and he hit people in the face. That didn't occur to me as being a prominent part of my interpretation. But Dick Edelman said to me one day, he said, "You know, Walter, your comment on life is self-pity." And you know, obviously that's not something anybody wants to hear, but it struck such a resonance with me. I said, "That's true. That's exactly what I do." So I was able to depart from any psychological identification or a feeling of insult, and have the insight to examine that and say, "God, that's absolutely true." Mm-hmm. And as a consequence, I took a whole different turn on the character. After all, this is a guy, as I say, who was a boxer.
Yeah.
He got in the ring. He wasn't there to tap dance. He was there to punch the other guy out. And once I discovered that, it opened up a whole new way of expressing myself. That I could be a punk, that I could be aggressive, that I could be cocky, and I welcomed a whole different Walter Koenig into the world, and one that I was thrilled to explore.
Hi, Walter. Chuck here. I'm going to jump in. I'd like to ask you to talk a bit about the Davy Jones Chekhov connection. Was it true that the producers wanted a similar type, young teen idol type, in casting the Chekhov character based on Davy Jones' success in The Monkees?
Well, initially they really had Albert Einstein in mind, but I had all my hair at the time and decided to go for Davy Jones instead.
Well, that's not entirely true. Weren't there some weren't there some wigs? You were wigging out, man. You were wigging out. Let's talk about the horrible wigs.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. I didn't know from relativity. What I did know was, hey, hey.
You were almost a monkey.
Yeah, they wanted somebody who was like Davy Jones, yeah. Like the Monkees. The curious thing is, when I finally met him, and he was the very last of the Monkees that I got to meet, my sense was that we didn't look anything alike. First of all, I had by then I had lost all my hair, and he had a full, glorious head of hair. And he was actually at least 3 inches shorter than I was. So we didn't carry the same kind of posture. And he had absolutely no idea who I was. The other Monkees that I met along the way, and I generally met them at personal appearances, they recognized my name at least, but Davy Jones had no idea. He was very pleasant. He was very, very charming. He was at this convention that was held in Burbank, and I told him what our connection was, and he nodded without seeming to feel very impressed by it. So, yeah, but it's true. I saw the memo that Gene Roddenberry wrote between the first and second seasons, because I wasn't in the first season, mm-hmm. When he said, let's bring on somebody that will attract the prepubescent female audience, like the young actor on The Monkees. So that is true.
Walter Koenig Pinup.
Well, yeah, and the speaking of Walter Koenig Pinup, I remember that for at least a year or two, you started to appear in the teen magazines, like 16 or Tiger Beat, Walter Koenig's Favorite Colors, or, you know, his Dream Girl, or that. What was it like being in the teen magazines?
Well, that was fun. You know, all these things, you know, that one hears about that happens to actors, but doesn't, one, you know, generally doesn't consider that is going to be part of their reality. I mean, you know, there was all these other actors, John Provost and
Kurt Russell,
all the others, I can't think of their names, who were, you know, the juveniles that became very, very popular with the preteen set. I certainly didn't consider myself a candidate for that, because one thing, when I started on Star Trek, I was already 31. I wasn't 19 or 18 or 20. They said I was 20. They said my character was 22, but I was already married. I had a child on the way. So, yeah, this was all quite unique. And fun, you know, I chose to see it as fun. For a while, I was concerned that people would see me. This is my particular neuroses, so you have to take that into account.
Mm-hmm.
But they would see me only as somebody who was brought on to appeal to this very young group of people, and consequently, how good could I be if that's where my appeal was? And I was hoping that I'd get more to do, not for the least of reasons, that to show that I was an actor of some maturity and that I was capable of being more profound in my portrayals than one might otherwise think of as a teenage idol kind of character would be.
Well, when you were the teenage idol for that year or two in the magazines, when you were out in public, were you ever mobbed by girls, or did they scream, or?
I was raped. I was raped by two girls.
No. I read that in Tiger Beat, so that actually happened. Oh, well, yeah, you were smiling on the cover.
It didn't happen. I kept wishing for it to happen.
Aww.
Get up and say, geez, today's the day that I get raped.
But did they scream if you were out in
public? That happened just once. It happened in New York at a convention, and they all charged at me. But it only happened once, never to be repeated. So that really wasn't the problem. I got a lot. My mail, however, was all from young kids. Was all from kids who were writing on lined paper and with pencils. You know, not like 95%. People asked me, playing a Russian, was that a problem? Did you get hate mail? And it was the Cold War, mm-hmm. after all. And the fact of the matter is that my audience just wasn't interested. Didn't care about the fact that there was a Cold War going on. They were all about my hair.
Or the wig.
Yeah, and it was a wig. Half the time it was a wig. So, I couldn't take it too terribly seriously, you know.
Walter Koenig is on the line with us. Walter Koenig, the actor known around the world as Pavel Chekhov on the original Star Trek and the first six Star Trek movies, and Alfred Bester on Babylon 5. Walter's memoir, Beaming Up and Getting Off, available wherever books are sold through Jacobs Brown Media Group. You can also find it at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, wherever books are sold online. You mentioned meeting each of the various monkeys in the course of doing personal appearances at conventions and whatnot. I know enough about the convention scene that, and I've been to enough, that besides having something in common with 5,000 people, for a lot of actors, it can be fun because it may give you an opportunity to meet someone that you've always admired but have never crossed paths with before. Has there been anyone that you met, and any actor or anyone that you met at a convention, Walter, that stands out, that was one of the fun moments for you?
Sure. A lot of really talented people. The most recent was Jodie Foster.
Oh.
That was a thrill. And she was very gracious. And we spent a minute and a half together, but it was delightful. I was really very, very pleased to meet her. I also met Mark Ruffalo, who has a similar political stature and point of view as I have,
mm-hmm.
and I very much respect and admire his activism. And he played the Hulk on TV. Well, he played the Hulk's human character on TV, as well as several good movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to think of. I mean, there are a lot of people who I've met over the years. I bumped into Cary Grant.
Oh.
Yeah. And it was so nonplussed by experience that all I could say was, do you know where the bathroom is?
It's right down the hall.
Yeah. I had a most embarrassing experience with Marlon Brando. I was at a delicatessen in Studio City in North Hollywood, and there was a guy in front of me paying the bill, his bill, and I was behind him about to pay mine. And I said, Jesus, his neck looks so familiar. And then, as if on cue, I said, help me. He turned to the left so I could see his profile. And then I realized it was Marlon Brando. And I was, I was really shook up by it. and I made an incredible fool of myself. Just, it was just one of those things that you, whenever you feel that you're getting too, feeling too self-important,
mm-hmm.
all you need to do is remember this particular experience.
Yeah.
And it just brings you right down to earth.
Yeah.
Because I whispered in his ear, "Oh God, I almost can't say it again." But there's a certain therapy in my confessing this over and over again. It rids me a little bit of my humiliation, because I whispered in his ear, "You'll always be a hero to me."
What did he do?
Jesus. Can you imagine saying that to somebody? Anyway, he looked at me as if I was indeed from Planet X, and didn't quite acknowledge my existence, turned back, paid the bill, and then evidently was so shook up by my euphoric little notation to him, that he left his wallet behind.
Oh, wow.
So I grabbed the wallet and ran after him, again, like a total moron, and said, Mr. Brando, your wallet. And he took it, and I don't think he's moved that, I don't think he ever moved that fast again. So there you are. Yeah, there have been people, I do have, and then I've got to go, guys.
Okay.
Okay, just my one last story, and it's in the book. And if you're under 50, you probably don't even know who this person is. But I was doing a play with Jackie Coogan, who played the kid in the Charlie Chaplin movie.
Yes, and some of our listeners will know him as Uncle Fester on The Addams Family.
Exactly. And we were doing a play. In fact, I left Star Trek for a month. I asked him if I could be excused. And at this point, everybody knew we weren't going to be picked up, so they had no problem with releasing me for a month. So I'm doing the play with Jackie Coogan. We're having a great time. He's a real fun guy. And Betty Grable. Now, see, this is the name people are going to say, who?
I know who Betty Grable is.
Oh, okay, there you go.
That's all that matters.
Right. She was tattooed on every airplane mm-hmm. during the Second World War. She was known as Legs.
Yes.
The best legs in the world. Mm-hmm. And she was a movie actress.
Yeah.
So she opens in the sister theater to where Jackie Coogan and I are performing. And there's a guy in Chicago, and this is in Chicago, and there's a guy in Chicago who is known for doing interviews on opening night with theater actors.
Was this Herb Kupcinet you're talking about, or somebody else?
What his name? I don't remember his name.
Kup?
But he was very irritating.
Okay.
And insulting. And so he after the show, he invited Betty Grable to come sit at his table. But he also invited Jackie Coogan, who had been married to Betty Grable back in the day. We're talking about, I think, 20s or mm-hmm. the 30s or mm-hmm. something. 30s, probably. And so he invited him. And then in
Walter Koenig's memoir, Beaming Up and Getting Off, Life Before and Beyond Star Trek, available Jacobs Brown Media Group. You can also find it Amazon.com, BarnesNoble.com, wherever books are sold online. Louise Sorrell will join us when we come back on TV Confidential.
Now you can get generic Viagra shipped to your door for about $2 a pill. Get the same impact for less. Call Steel Man Pills now and get the same blue pill for about $2 a pill. Call now for the 50-pill special and save even more. Plus, get a free bonus.
800-932-2613. 800-932-2613. That's 800-932-2613.
One more item. If you're starting a company, particularly one that is in an emerging market, you know that averting any sort of legal dispute is crucial to your business plan. Our friends at Tectonic Law offer an array of services that can help you avoid and preempt future litigation while also developing and protecting your intellectual property and intangible assets. Tectonic Law serves the needs of a host of emerging industries throughout California
and beyond, including industrial designers, beverage makers, artists, farmers, retail stores, health practitioners, wellness experts, cosmetics manufacturers, nonprofit organizations, innovators in sustainable practices, and libraries. Go to TectonicLaw.com to learn more about how Tectonic Law can help your business thrive. TectonicLaw.com, rock solid representation for groundbreaking industries.
Buying or selling a home can be one of the most stressful things we'll ever do in life, but it doesn't have to be. And no one knows better than our friends at Front Porch Realty. They're a community of realtors serving the Northern Bay Area of California that cares about their clients as individuals first and foremost. Whether you're a first-time buyer or looking to lease or sell your property in the Bay Area, Front Porch Realty will help you through this important transition by providing you with the right information for your situation while lessening the pain. They also work with a network of realtors throughout California who provide the same high caliber of customer service. Call Carrot Strain at 415-886-7411 for a realtor referral near you. You can also visit their website, frontporchrealtygroup.com, for more information on the services they provide, including upcoming workshops and seminars. For more information, call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 or visit frontporchrealtygroup.com. Front Porch Realty. They'll find the solution that works best for you.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-217-5107. 800-217-5107. That's 800-217-5107.
And welcome you back to TV Confidential Radio Talk Show About Television. Always happy to welcome back our friend Louise Sorrell. Louise Sorrell, the actress known around the world as Vivian Alamein on Days of Our Lives and the Augusta Lockridge on Santa Barbara. In case you missed it, folks, there was a big, big, big cast reunion a few weeks back as we record this conversation that marked the 40th anniversary of the premiere of Santa Barbara in 1984. More than 40 cast members participated in that event, including Louise Sorrell. We'll ask her about that. Plus, we'll talk about her recent return to Days of Our Lives and whether more appearances are in the works. Louise Sorrell, welcome back to our program.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
We will chat. In many respects, a cast reunion such as the one you attended a few weeks ago in Burbank is not unlike going to a high school reunion or a college reunion. Some people you probably have touched base with, you know, one way or another over the years. Others you may not have seen since Santa Barbara wrapped production. What was the experience like for you?
Well, that's absolutely perfect parallel. It was like a high school reunion because there were people that, I didn't work with because I had left the show actually twice.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just, it was so full of love. I'm getting chills just thinking about it. The appreciation for Santa Barbara, the number of cast members who showed, a couple of them who I desperately missed, of course, was Nick Coster and Jed Allen. But so many, many people came back, Marcy and A and Judith McConnell, and we were all, it was like a theater experience for me anyway, because I'd never done a soap. But the response of the fans that day that we had this event was overwhelming. It was like a love fest. And there was a deep appreciation for the quality, quality of Santa Barbara, which was filled with wit and very good actors. And it should have stayed on the air for a much longer time. Unfortunately, things changed. People came and went, and it didn't hold up. But it was an extraordinary experience for us to get together and hug everybody. There was never any sense of you know, jealousy or any of that stuff that can go on in those situations. It was a great feeling of warmth and love and appreciation.
You mentioned that for you, working on that show was very much like working in the theater. I understand that was many of the other cast members having come from the theater. I understand it was much. They felt much the same when you all worked together on that show.
Yes. Well, first of all, they allowed us. Of course, there was more time then, and money's changed in terms of, you know, how much money and time can be spent. But we had quite a bit of time, and probably they went way over their budget because they'd never done the people involved hadn't done a soap under those circumstances. But they allowed us a lot of rehearsal time and to fix things, change things, work on lunch hour, and so it evolved like you were doing a play, and highly intelligent actors, so it that had a lot to do with it. And of course, we had Dame Judith Anderson among many people, so it was there was a wonderful feeling there of camaraderie, and I had never done this soap, but I thought, what's wrong with this? It's a really, you know, creative process, so I loved it.
Louise Sorrell's on the line with us. Louise Sorrell, the actress known around the world as Vivian Alamein on Days of Our Lives and Augusta Lockridge on Santa Barbara. More than 40 cast members of Santa Barbara gathered together earlier this summer at the Colony Theater Company in Burbank, California, to celebrate the 40th anniversary of the premiere of Santa Barbara in 1984. The event raised money for the Conestoga Shakespeare Coalition, a nonprofit theater company in Dalton, Georgia, that delivers the works of William Shakespeare to audiences of all ages. Louise shared a few memories of her years on Santa Barbara that night. She shared a few memories with us today. Just circling back to the whole theater vibe that marked your personal experience doing Santa Barbara and that of the other cast members, I would imagine participating in an evening, as you all did in Burbank, that supported a Shakespeare, a theater devoted to the works of Shakespeare, that made it all the more special, I would imagine.
Well, it was, and I'm sure you realize that. It's Lane Davies, whose company it is, in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
He's very devoted to the theater, and he and I actually did a production of Hamlet in Los Angeles while we were shooting Santa Barbara. How insane is that? But it was the Globe Theater in Hollywood, and Dame Judith came, which was horrifying for me. I mean, oh, my God. Okay. I was Gertrude, obviously, and she had done Gertrude, so you can imagine. Luckily, we were very good friends, so she didn't slaughter me. But, yeah, it was Lane is so devoted to the theater, and he deserves all, you know, whatever help he can get for this.
I love hearing stories like that, Louise, because you've been a performer pretty much your entire life. You personally were drawn to the stage when you were a young girl. So, when you performed that night at the Globe Theater, you knew what you were doing. But it's kind of cool that when you knew that someone like Dame Judith was in the audience, that made you straighten up your back a little bit more.
You have no idea. Luckily, we were friends, like girlfriends, really. Uh-huh. I mean, we spent quite a bit of time together. I just worshipped her, and I wrote a long piece about her. She was extraordinary. Yeah.
Louise Sorrell, also a woman of letters. She is working on a book as we speak. If I remember correctly, it is more a series of essays about life in general and life in New York in general than a recollection of your experiences as an actress, although in some cases, such as Dame Judith, you share a few memories of her.
Yes, yes. I wrote a piece about her, and I gave it to Jerry Dobson, who created, you know, Santa Barbara, and is a writer and a lovely human being, and who was just, he loved it. I was so thrilled. He really appreciated it, and I was complimented. So, yeah, I do have a lot of writing, but I'm putting a book together as we speak. Well, not at this moment. some of it's lying in front of me as we're talking. anyway.
Do you, let me ask you this, writer to writer. Do you have a clean desktop, or do you use your floor as to pile papers or to spread things out, depending on what you're working on?
What I do is because now we have, computers and et cetera, I type out, not everything, I found a lot of handwritten stuff, but I type out things and then I just print them up. And I don't even want to talk about how many papers fly around, but I had to put them together because the fact this man is helping me put the book together. So their papers are not all flying around at the moment, they're in an envelope. I've gathered them up.
Well,
when I write something, I usually try to print it out immediately, unless it's just handwritten, and I find them all over the place. So,
well, as long as you know where everything is, and I would imagine that, if you're like most writers I know, your desk, your office may seem like a chaotic mess, but if you were to clean it up, then you wouldn't know where anything was anymore.
Yeah, it's scary. Well, because of the fact that I've been yelled at to do a book, and I feel like it's something really productive and I care a lot about it. I've been very aware, very aware of where the papers are because I had to get them together and send them off to this man who's going to make doing a Word document for me. Because I'm an idiot when it comes to all that technical stuff.
Well, Louise has shared enough of her writings on our program,
You have.
So I know that you have something to say, and you have a very particular point of view. You have a very unique point of view that captures who you are as a unique person, and it has your devilish sense of humor, because humor is important to everything you do, whether you act or whether you just live your everyday life.
Yes, you're right. I think that's survival for me is humor. I mean, particularly when you go to a doctor's office and they ask you if you're allergic to anything, and my answer is usually Republicans. that's how I get through with a little humor here and there.
Louise Sorrell is on the line with us. Louise Sorrell, the actress known around the world as Vivian Alamein on Days of Our Lives and Augusta Lockridge on Santa Barbara. She's working on her book as we speak, and hopefully she'll be ready to share her book with the public sometime in the months ahead. You can follow Louise on Facebook. Louise is one of more than 40 cast members of Santa Barbara who gathered together earlier this summer in Burbank, California, to celebrate the 40th anniversary of the premiere of Santa Barbara in 1984. You shared some stories. All the other cast members shared stories. I understand one of the memories you shared at the cast reunion had to do with the plot line in which Augusta killed her daughter's pigeon and served it for dinner.
Yeah. How did you know that?
I do my homework. I take a deep dive into all things Louise Sorrell before I talk.
Okay. Well, I don't know if Jerry ever really appreciated what I did, but, I mean, it really was, they had written a scene where Augusta serves her daughter's pet pigeon as an hors d'oeuvre, and I was mortified when I read it. I even called Dame Judith, and she said, "Oh, darling, it's disgusting." Judith, please say something. She said, "I'm too old, I'm too tired," but she did say something. And then finally, I just couldn't handle it. I ran upstairs to poor Bridget Dobson, who has passed, and she was a lovely woman. They were so talented. But I couldn't help myself. I ran up and said, "I am not, this is horrifying. I'm calling the ASPCA. I don't know what possessed me to say that. I'm not going to kill, how can I kill my daughter's pigeon? That's absolute cruelty. She's not that kind of person." And Bridget, wasn't happy with me at all. She didn't want to change it because they thought it was pretty funny. Mainly what happened is I just didn't, we had the scene and each member of the family said, "Oh, this is delicious. Is this chicken? Is this a rabbit?" And I kept saying, no. Well, is it, squirrel? I don't know. Anyway, and finally my daughter, just sat up. She said, "Is it pitter?" And I and I simply wouldn't answer, which was even worse than saying yes. But I couldn't do it. I just could not bring myself to say it. And it went as it went. It didn't make a big noise or anything. But I told Bridget I was calling the ASPCA. I don't know what possessed me, but that's how anxious I get.
Well, it's the part of you that would not hurt any sort of animal, you know.
Oh, God, no. I would, frankly, I could live happily with animals forever after what's going on in this world right now. I went to Africa, and they had to drag me out of there. I just found myself at home there.
In general, when people come up to you as you're taking a walk or whatever, and they ask you or they remember some of the heinous things that you did in either as Augusta or as Vivian, I mean,
nobody talks to me.
They don't. No. You're pulling my leg. I could.
No,
tell.
I'm not. No,
really?
No, really. They don't. Once in a very great while, somebody will say, "Oh, aren't you Vivian?" I mean, but they don't really. I don't think because of the character, maybe they stay away from me. they don't decide that that's who you really are. Hopefully, and then they find out that I'm not like that at all.
Yeah.
But I don't really have people approaching me. Honestly, once in a while somebody recognizes me, but I'm not. I'm sort of quiet and with the dog and, not out there, so to speak. I'm not a publicity sort of person. I do it, but you know what I mean.
I know what you mean. Yeah. Well, it's good that when people do interact with you, they're able to make the distinction between Louise, the person, and the various characters that you played, and they're able to make the separation that Louise, the person, will never do any of the rotten things that you did on screen.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, thank God.
Yes.
Some of it's pretty funny.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it's not so funny.
Yeah.
But it's a good role because people always love the villainous character. It has an energy behind it, I guess.
And I would imagine as a performer, the villains are, I was going to say funner, but are more fun to play because, the more outrageous things you do, the more that you can kind of dive into it and put your own spin, knowing that it's outlandish and this is something you would never do in real life. But it's a way to release something.
Well, I think it was Billy Wilder or somebody like that who said, "Never be a victim." So.
Never be a what?
Well, victim. But
oh, okay.
Victim.
Yes.
A victim. don't want to play a victim.
Yeah.
Really, not interesting. So, it's fun. It's a fun role. I had some really funny, wonderful stuff way back when on Days with Yvonne. Guevara, we had a great fun time together. I wish they'd bring him back, but, I don't know what they're doing.
Louise Sorrell is on the line with us. Louise Sorrell, the actress known around the world as Vivian Alamein on Days of Our Lives and as Augusta Lockridge on Santa Barbara. Louise will be returning to Days of Our Lives as Vivian during the month of October. We'll ask her about that and more. We continue our conversation with Louise Sorrell here on TV Confidential.
Now you can get generic Viagra shipped to your door for about $2 a pill. Get the same impact for less. Call Steelman Pills now and get the same blue pill for about $2 a pill. Call now for the 50-pill special and save even more. Plus, get a free bonus.
800-932-2613. 800-932-2613. That's 800-932-2613.
One more item. Are you starting a company in an emerging market or developing something new? Do you have intellectual property but aren't sure how to protect it? Reach out to our friends at Tectonic Law. They offer rock-solid representation for groundbreaking industries who need help capturing and protecting their full portfolio of intellectual property and intangible assets, including trademark rights, copyright rights, and privacy rights. Tectonic Law streamlines the complex intricacies of intellectual property and business law in easy-to-understand terms that will help you and your company form a concrete plan of action to secure and protect the value of your brand and your creative work product. Tectonic Law is licensed to practice throughout the state of California. They also practice before such tribunals as the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office and Internet Corporation for assigned names and numbers. Go to TectonicLaw.com to learn more about how Tectonic Law can help your business thrive. TectonicLaw.com. Rock solid representation for groundbreaking industries.
If you're a diabetic, we have great news. You can end the painful finger sticks with a new CGM. Plus, they may be covered by Medicare, Medicaid, or private insurance. If you use insulin or have had hypoglycemic events, you may qualify. Call U.S. Med now to learn more.
800-640-7460. 800-640-7460. 800-640-7460. That's 800-640-7460.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-217-5107. 800-217-5107. That's 800-217-5107.
Ed Robertson, along with a guest, Louise Sorrell. Louise Sorrell, the actress known around the world as Vivian Alamein on Days of Our Lives and as Augusta Lockridge on Santa Barbara. Louise was one of more than 40 cast members of Santa Barbara who got together earlier this summer to celebrate the 40th anniversary of the premiere of Santa Barbara in 1984. The event raised money for the Conestoga Shakespeare Coalition, nonprofit theater company in Dalton, Georgia, that delivers the works of William Shakespeare to audiences of all ages. Louise will be returning to Days of Our Lives later on in October. We'll ask about that and more in just a second. You mentioned earlier that, at least you mentioned this before we started recording, that in addition to flying out for the Santa Barbara cast reunion, you were able to film additional episodes of Days. It sounds like your return to Days has been well received. Can you give our listeners who are fans of Days an idea of what to expect in the weeks and months ahead?
Well, what I shot this time won't be on until 2025. That's how far ahead they are. So whatever I have shot, which I did in March, will be on. I got the dates for that in October and November.
Okay.
But that's different than what I just did, which won't be on until, it's amazing, 2025. They're so far ahead.
Well, that's good for me because I know that your next scheduled on-air appearance on Days will be October. I will make sure this airs in advance of October so people have people can look for you.
I got some dates. I've just scribbled down some dates. I think November, October 28th. I mean, it's all over this. November 1 to November 4th. There aren't a lot of them. Those are the ones coming up.
Okay.
Now.
Well, as I say, look, I'm going to tease you a little bit. You may not go out of your way to do publicity, but when you do publicity, you're very good at it because you have the dates right in front of you.
Thank you.
Louise Sorrell is on the line with us. You can follow Louise on Facebook. This is one of those. You've talked to me enough times to know that every now and then I'm going to ask you a question that is akin to asking you what you had for lunch 50 years ago. But because you did so many. Before you did Santa Barbara and entered the world of daytime television, you were on virtually every major primetime show. Back in the three network universe, and one of the shows you did, I forgot you did this, but one of the shows you did early in your TV and film career, you did an episode of Run for Your Life with Ben Gazzara. I don't know if you have any memories of that. I hope you do, because Gazzara, as I understand, was a very idiosyncratic person and a very idiosyncratic actor.
Well, I thought he was a really interesting actor. I don't remember much because you go through these things and you just want to get through it and whatever. He was very, he was very polite. I think I want to say he said something like, say hello to your TV stars. I don't know. He made some remark. It was silly, just commenting. But I don't remember a lot. He's a good actor. very professional, and, you know, very attractive guy.
Mm-hmm.
I think I played a nun on one of these shows. I can't remember.
You did. You did.
I was a nun.
When we first see you, you're a nun. But then, and when Gazzara first sees you, you're a nun. And you're both on a train, and then you get up to excuse yourself, and the next time Gazzara sees you, you're not a nun anymore. And so he said, what's going on here?
Well, thank you for bringing back my memory. I totally do not remember anything about it, except that I wasn't allowed to wear any makeup, which, of course, you know, every actress wants to wear makeup.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a nun, you have none.
Yes.
So to speak.
Correct.
So, but I don't remember a lot about it. There were so many shows. Thank God. I mean, I was very lucky. But everybody I worked with, I never had any issues. We were all just so professional. And certainly Ben Gazzara, who on theater and, you know, theater actors are so well-trained and very easy to deal with because they care about what they're doing. So that's what, honest to God, I really don't remember. Unfortunately, he didn't ask me out.
Well.
I've been married.
I was going to say, when you are an actress like a Louise Sorrell and was very much in demand on both in a theater and on television, working as steadily as you did, and then going into the movie of the week era, you did a lot of those. You know, I mean, you go from one to another. I can understand why everything kind of blurs. The only thing you remember mostly is that you were working a lot, which every actor wants to do, and that most of the people you worked with were good people.
They were. I was really very lucky. I mean, there was always some possible, you know, threat of something happening because, you know, leading men on shows. So when I was going to work with Telly Savalas on, what was his show?
Kojak.
I did about three of them, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But when I first went, my dear, I had a very close friend who's Greek. And I said, Nico, tell me what to say, something in Greek to Telly, as soon as I meet him, because he was, you know, a ladies' man, so anyway, he thought he was. And so I got myself, you know, I got some, because I have a good ear for language, and I really put him off immediately when he took my hand and said something in Greek, I responded. And then we were fine.
Well, that speaks to something else that I've learned in our conversations, Louise. You have always... You've never been afraid to assert yourself. You've never been afraid to assert yourself as a person. You've never been afraid to assert yourself as an actress, and you've never been afraid to assert yourself in terms of the character you play. If you felt the character you're playing was doing was asked to do something that's not true and not authentic to the character you had created, and that story with you standing your ground with Telly Savalas is yet another example of that.
Well, you know, I try to do it with humor because I'm not a fighter really.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to be have respect and respect whoever I'm working with, and I try to do a lot with humor because I think that's, you know, the best way to deal. Although, if we were discussing politics at the moment, there is no humor. And there's a language that I can't even speak out loud.
Yeah.
So we'll pass on that.
I understand. Well, this is a politics-free zone, you know. I'm just thinking off the top of my head. This is a calendar year 2024 marks the 50th anniversary of a very famous movie of the week you did with Richard Long called The Girl Who Came Gift Wrap, which was written by our mutual friend Susan Silver. Everyone remembers that movie because of Karen Valentine and the bikini, but you did almost all your scenes with Richard Long, and you two just had, I don't know if you'd ever met each other before you started working together, but you guys clicked.
Oh, good. I'll have to check in with Susan. Lives around the corner.
Does she really?
Yes.
Yes, well...
I just saw her the other day.
Okay. All right, well, I, 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 I produce her podcast, so Susan and I are in contact on a weekly basis. So
Like I said,
I'm glad to hear that working with Richard Long was a positive experience. He's one of those actors I always liked.
Oh, he was such a nice man. I mean, I don't remember a lot about it, but I just remember he was a lovely human being.
Well,
And
again, you're someone. You're not. I'm blanking on the Gloria Swanson character in Sunset Boulevard. You're not one who revisits all of her roles. You look forward, and again, you're creating new content every day, which is what a real artist does.
Well, we try. I'm just creating it with writing now.
Yes.
Mainly.
Yes. Yes. And Louise's book of essays, if all goes well, will be coming hopefully either later in 2024 or sometime in 2025.
Yeah, I don't know when. I mean, it has to be, you know, there's such a process that I've never been through before. And it is quite a long one. And then you have to get the publisher or publish it yourself or whatever I have to do.
You're moving it forward. You're moving it forward, and it is always a pleasure to chat with you. I look forward to our next conversation about your book or whatever else you're up to.
Oh, me too. Thank you so much, Ed. I know, 120 out there?
Pretty darn close.
That's what my sister said.
Yes.
That's horrible.
Yes. No. And we happen to be recording in the middle of a 4-day heat wave here in Southern California. Louise has family out not far from where I live. So we're commiserating about that. This is one of those stretches where we say thank God that God created air conditioning.
Ed Robertson, about 25-year-old Donna Allen, Phil Grace, Greg Gerbart, and Susan Silver, thank you so much for listening. Stay healthy, stay safe. We'll talk to you next time on TV Confidential.
If you're a diabetic, we have great news. You can end the painful finger sticks with a new CGM. Plus, they may be covered by Medicare, Medicaid, or private insurance. If you use insulin or have had hypoglycemic events, you may qualify. Call US Med now to learn more.
800-640-7460. 800-640-7460. 800-640-7460. That's 800-640-7460.
One more item. Are you starting a company in an emerging market or developing something new? Do you have intellectual property but aren't sure how to protect it? Reach out to our friends at Tectonic Law. They offer rock-solid representation for groundbreaking industries who need help capturing and protecting their full portfolio of intellectual property and intangible assets, including trademark rights, copyright rights, and privacy rights. Tectonic Law streamlines the complex intricacies of intellectual property and business law in easy-to-understand terms that will help you and your company form a concrete plan of action to secure and protect the value of your brand and your creative work product. Tectonic Law is licensed to practice throughout the state of California. They also practice before such tribunals as the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office and the Internet Corporation for assigned names and numbers. Go to tectoniclaw.com to learn more about how Tectonic Law can help your business thrive. Tectoniclaw.com, rock solid representation for groundbreaking industries.
This portion of TV Confidential is brought to us by our friends at Front Porch Realty, the community of realtors in the Northern Bay Area of California that is committed to finding the solution that is best for their clients. Whether you're a first-time home buyer or looking to sell or lease your property.
It's time again for the Majestic Stillwater Powwow, October 4th through 6th at the Reading Rodeo Grounds, the free admission for all ages. See the return of the beautiful dancers, the feel of the powerful drummers. Learn and experience firsthand the culture of the Native American people. Proudly brought to you by the Reading Rancheria and Wind River Resort and Casino. The Stillwater Powwow, October 4th through 6th at the Reading Rodeo Grounds. For information, call 530-225-8979 or visit stillwaterpowwow.com. Brought to you by the Potter family, this station and other proud sponsors.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill we all have to pay? time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.